It's getting a little warm. It's getting to be summertime.
Uh-oh. Well, it's Jay Belts. He's a regular guest here. He runs his own integritypensions.com. He's on here every single month, bringing the latest and the greatest. And I was kind of looking for that swashbuckling introduction here off the top of my head, but it's not here right now. So it's great to have you back on board, Jay. It's always good to have you. How's your last month been?
Actually, it's been great. We've been blessed with a lot of business. We always have just enough, and we've been busy every day. We're actually trying to take off Fridays with this heat, you know, to conserve some energy for all of us, and you know, maybe do more 4-10s, so to speak, or if we meet our goals, to take them off. So it's nice.
So I noticed you're wearing your Hawaiian shirt today, that swashbuckler that you are.
Well, this time of year, we all think about the heat, how it affects us, and possibly looking for some cooler avenues. So I think subconsciously I picked the Hawaii shirt this morning.
Yeah, it's good. It's a little bit cooler there. It depends upon what part, but Maui. Maui's a wonderful place.
Yeah, I was in Maui in April, and so I was looking at pictures today, and just that psychological advantage of staying cool.
You kind of want to go back.
I do.
I didn't have to ask. I knew you did.
No.
Set up a satellite office in Maui? Is that what you're thinking about?
Well, there's actually very good pension personnel in Hawaii. And Hawaii actually has about the same number of retirement plans than the state of Nevada. They're very close, like within 100 plans.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, but there's a lot more people there that do the work that we do. So, you know, we'd be one of many, but I'm game.
That's kind of surprising, huh?
Yeah,
Maybe not so much so, because it's a wonderful place to be. And I'm sure a lot of people, you know, they probably retired there and kept their pension practice, I imagine.
Could be. You know, Leonard, a couple of things came out this week that are noteworthy. Last year, the IRS came out with an amnesty program for those that have the one-participant plans. Sometimes those are the solo 401ks. And they wanted those people to file their returns if they hadn't done so. So they gave them a free pass for a year. But then last week, they said, no more free pass, but we will give you reduced fees. So if you come in with a late return, depending upon the timing of how late you are, there's a fee from $500 to $1,500. But that's a lot less than $25 per day accumulated.
Okay, so solo Ks have a little bit more latitude than a traditional plan, because you file a Form 5500 for a traditional plan, and you have to file that every year, even if you have $10 in it. But a solo K gives you a little bit more flexibility. What is that like, Jay?
It does. It's a minimum amount, Leonard, of $250,000. And so until you hit that level, at the end of the plan year, there's no need to file. Even for a defined benefit plan, you don't have to file. So that's a nice little break for those folks.
Now, is that what is it for? Maybe I misspoke, but if you have a company and you've got $100,000 in it and you've got 10 employees, do you have to file the Form 5500, or do they give you the break?
No break at all, because the reporting requirement is really because of your employees. So you're an ERISA-covered plan, and that's the differentiation. When you're a one-person plan, you're not covered by Title I of ERISA. So therefore, you don't have the same reporting requirements.
See, that's the reason why we have you on here, because you know all these things right off the cuff. Unrehearsed, again, as always. But, you know, there are interesting issues. I was watching a Fox Business report last week about money flowing out of these ERISA plans.
Yeah, there sure are. You know, we know the baby boomers are from 1946, 1964 in terms of their dates of birth, and those people are now retiring, you know, ages 65 and 70. And last year, we now have the reports for the very first time, we have more money flowing out of tax-deferred savings programs than going in. They're reporting, it was in 2013, excuse me, not last year, but $11.4 billion coming out. And so people like yourselves, Leonard, that manage money for retirement plans have to shift some of their focus now from the plans to where the money's going. A lot of times it's going, you know, to the individuals to use, or also to their IRAs. So we have a lot more, I think, importance now on IRAs. So some good thinking coming out on IRAs right now. In fact, we have now a workaround for that one-time-per-year rollover rule.
No, let's talk about that.
Yeah, it just came out. It's in the Wall Street Journal last weekend. It's kind of interesting. So recalls is under Publication 590 that oversees IRAs, that last year the IRS said their interpretation changed, and you could no longer have more than one IRA rollover per year. That's that period of time you take the money out and use it for 60 days. people were using that back to back to back, and in essence, you know, going under the rule, you know. So here's how it works now. You can only do it once per year starting January 1st. That rule, though, under that publication does not apply to Roth conversions. So I see Scott's wheels over there turning around. How's that work? Well, let's say you need to meet payroll and you need $10,000. You pull that money out of your IRA, use it for 60 days, hopefully get the money to pay it back, but you pay it back to an IRA conversion. You set up a new account, your Roth conversion, and you can use those conversions as often as you want. You're not limited to once per year. Now, there's one more step involved, because as you know, Scott, if you don't reconvert that back to an IRA, you pay tax on it, right?
Yep.
So that's the catch. You've got three steps. Take it out, make sure you put it back within 60 days, and then by the end of the tax year, do your reconversion.
Can you add to that, considering whether you pull a Mulligan, pull some things out, and move it?
I think you can. And so whatever that value is, though, that's the reconversion value. So it would include all of your gains and losses. So interesting little twist on that.
Now, do you think they're going to shut that down when people listen to Jay Belts?
No, you know, it is kind of a little quandary, I think, for the IRS, because they want to push or, you know, let people do IRA conversions, you know, because they get their tax at that point in time. Maybe they'll limit it, maybe to two or three, something like that. But I think more than one is necessary sometimes.
You could get in big trouble if you're forecasting what your cash flow is, like what you said in your example.
Oh, yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're like, yeah, I'll pay that back real soon. And then the cash flow doesn't come in. Then, then you're sort of...
That is a tax trap to be wary of.
Yes.
And that happens all the time, quite frankly.
Yeah, whether it's this strategy or not. Exactly. Yeah.
That's why these merchant advances off of the credit cards are such a big deal, because you can basically finance part of your business through it, but the interest rates are very high. In this case, the tax rates could be very high.
You know, Leonard, speaking of those flows of money, for the first time, I think ever, the Congressional Budget Office, the CBO, has now started to put into their budget increased revenues from money coming out of plans that's being taxed. Recall, when they do that budget, they do a 10-year forecast, and so they treat retirement plan deductions the same as mortgage interest deductions, but they're different, right? Mortgage interest is a loss deduction. The 401k contribution is just a tax deferral. It's going to come back. And so now they're recognizing that that's coming back for the next 25 years, and they're increasing their projections because they're seeing that cash flow.
So it's basically $4 billion and rising probably or something like that.
It's a big number, that's for sure. Yeah.
And which is really a big percentage of that, what, $4 trillion budget or whatever it is?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, you know, California just passed their budget, right? The proposal, at least.
Yeah, you know, it's really good about California, and I just love digging on California because I'm there. But, you know, it was 2 weeks ago that they said, well, you know, the illegal aliens can purchase health insurance from the health insurance exchange. Governor Jerry Brown just said that, well, you know, the kids, we got to give it to the kids.
We just give it to them, right?
Yeah, we just got to give it to the kids. So, you know, health insurance for the kids for illegal aliens. And, of course, it's only a matter of time before health insurance for people who just don't make that much money, whether they're legal or not, will get free health insurance in California. Over to you, Jay.
Right. Well, the other topic I had today quickly is we've really seen a continued emergence of that cash balance plan, which is the type of defined benefit plan, for a number of reasons. One of those is we have great leveraging there, Leonard. So we do that in combination with a 401k plan. And remember, Scott, when we had defined contribution plans, we're limited to total cash flow for one person of $53,000 this year. But when we add a defined benefit plan, that number is dependent upon age and salary. So that number could be over $200,000. So when you have professionals that need to save more than $50,000 per year, it's a great plan to think about. And it's also really great when you have more than one professional, because it kind of follows this rule of delineation, I call it. It's like, what's mine's mine, what's yours is yours. I don't want to pay for you, you don't want to pay for me. That plan keeps our accounts or our benefits separate. So we each have our cash balance, and we each get our own earnings on that. So it's really great for that reason. And another really good reason is that just last week as well, the IRS said, we're going to include that plan language in pre-approved plans. So you no longer have to have an individually designed plan to have a cash balance plan. So that means it'll be less costly to adopt and less costly to administer, because now you're under the 6-year restatement cycle versus the 5-year restatement cycle. So what's that, a 20% gain right off the top on that? So they're becoming much more accepted. The IRS is now taking in language from the pre-approved document providers so we can adopt those plans for plan sponsors at a lower cost.
So, okay, so that's a big deal. So basically now you can actually get that plan. You don't have to be some, you don't have to go through and get a custom
exactly, Jason.
Plan and that, for that.
That's a $1,000 to $2,000 reduction off the top.
And it's, well, yeah, obviously. And
if not more.
What's the effective date on that again?
Well, the defined benefit restatements are going to be starting next April on a 2-year cycle. So that's going to come into play next year.
So when can they adopt a plan that doesn't need to be
probably
custom designed?
Probably next year. Probably January 1st next
year. Okay, so basically
worst case,
starting
May
next
1st
year.
Next year. Yeah.
So that's not just a power plan. That's a supercharged power pension plan.
Well, it really is. And so if you want to do it this year, you just know that you have to just restate it again next year.
Yeah.
But your providers should take into account some economies of scale. You know, you just did it last year.
Right.
You're up on all those provisions, so it shouldn't be too hard to convert it over within their document system.
Right. Well, that's really exciting.
No, it's really exciting.
Now, do you think that's because they're trying to encourage or incentivize saving? What's the thinking behind the change in policy?
I think it's a bit political. We're action groups like ASPA, the American Society of Pension Professionals and Actuaries, have really pushed for that. And that's a 12,000 member group that's, you know, wants, it makes sense. And it's actually, you know, it's less work for the IRS, and that's part of it too. When you can give them an idea where it's less costly for the IRS, they like that. You know, they're budget limited as well.
Yeah, well, that's good news.
Yeah. And the same thing applies to ESOPs now, by the way. Certain ESOPs will have that same ability to have a pre-approved plan. We've never had that since ERISA.
Yeah, that's
so there's some positive changes going on here.
Really good. Really good stuff, you guys. Yep.
So are there any negative trends out there in terms of enforcement actions that people need to be aware of? I mean, we talked about the kind of that grace period to come to an end with respect to filing 5500.
Yeah, I don't think so. You know, we had a scare like a couple years ago that said they're going to hire a bunch of auditors at the DOL, and they say they don't audit plans, they review plans, but we really haven't seen that too much. I mean, I haven't had, you know, knock on wood, a DOL review in 5 years.
So they're not, I mean, probably what the issue is they're not getting budget for it. Is that what the deal is?
Yeah, might be. Although they do, honestly, they follow up on every phone call that employees make to complain about plans. So it behooves employers to do the right thing all the time, make sure their plans are in compliance, and make sure that nobody, you know, calls, because then they have to take the time to answer that phone call. Otherwise, we've seen the same level of IRS review that we've had over the years. It's about a 2 to 3% review rate every year. So we do, you know, 4 or 5 audits a year at my practice. So
what, when your client gets a love letter from the Department of Labor, what's the process that you go through as a firm, number one, to help make them feel comfort and at ease? Because, you know, it can be frightening when a regulatory body gives you a letter.
Sure.
A lot of people are frightened for the IRS, Department of Labor, same thing. Well, you know, what do you go through as an organization to help them feel more comfortable? And then what do you do to kind of move it along for the Department of Labor so you have a successful outcome?
Well, we will handle that audit for them. We are authorized and have the credentials to do so. So we do that via a power of attorney form from the IRS, if it's the IRS side. And we assure them we'll handle that for them. We do a complete data collection process. So we got to go back 2 or 3 years sometimes. But we create a notebook or an electronic file for the auditor or for the reviewer. And then we interface with that reviewer or auditor on behalf of the plan sponsor. So we take it out of their hands because, you know, we do it all the time. They don't know what to do per se. And I think that's the assurance that they like. And fortunately, we've had great results the last couple of years.
Yeah, I've never had the privilege of going through one of those audits, but is it fairly similar to an IRS audit? You know, where you're advising the client, they're asking the client questions, and there's like a checkoff sheet that they go through, or what's
exactly
that like?
Yeah, the DOL list is, it could be 4 or 5 pages. The IRS is 3 or 4 pages, another checklist. But, you know, we do that for them. We step in the middle so that all communication goes through us.
And sometimes you don't know the answers to the questions, so you get back and it's not
exactly
that big of a deal.
Yeah. Yeah, and the auditors are real good about it. They know they're just trying to review and make sure that they're compliant with the law, so they're policing the rules. And if we show that we've followed to the best of our ability, then they're fine with that.
every once in a while you give us a legislative update. Do you see anything pending at all? It seems like we're kind of in a stagnant Congress right now with respect to legislation.
Yeah, I think we are. I don't see anything this year, actually. What you mentioned earlier in introduction is really good, that we did have that backlash from the subcommittees this week trying to pull the funding from the DOL fiduciary rules. They specifically said exactly that rule in their line item budget. And then they've had hearings lately, too, where they've really come down on the DOL. It's, you know, they're fighting it hard right now.
And so apparently Congress has received some pressure from some of the industry groups. I mean, SIFMA came down against this fiduciary
Absolutely.
Rule. And
a lot of folks.
And
yeah.
they're trying to come up with their own. Do you think that there's going to be something that's a hybrid that's acceptable that they'll propose to the Department of Labor? Or, you know, where do you think this is headed in terms of that?
I would hope that would be the sense that it's going to happen because... I get the sense, and all my reading from my side of the fence, or they're vastly opposed to the DOL. And the DOL has their own idea from the administration, but it's maybe a bit too hard line. So there's got to be some sort of balance in there that I think might come out of that eventually, which is good. We at least it's focusing on the right issues, which is trying to give plan participants and IRA holders the best advice possible and for the right fee.
Yeah, some of the commentary that I had seen in terms of a response from the industry is that it would trigger really an inability to be able to work with certain types of people mm-hmm. in the marketplace. And thereby, those folks wouldn't be rendered advice. And that's not really the intent of the best interest of somebody
right.
when they can't get any kind of advice at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read some of those transcripts from the meetings this last week. And there's a lot of smart people out there in the industry. And government may not always think of all the ins and outs. And so the DOL was caught a couple of times saying, well, we have to work through that. You know, well, we don't have an answer for that yet. Which, if you're proposing final rules, you're supposed to have all the answers.
Yeah, and, you know, when you violate those rules, and the reason why in industry it's so critical is when you violate those rules, you've essentially committed some sort of crime because you violated a regulatory statute.
Right, exactly.
So it's a very serious private business. But it's not so serious for regulators because they can just, well, we got to work through it. But it doesn't work that way on the private side. There is no working through it because you don't know what the penalties and consequences are going to be, and you don't know what the regulators are going to, which side of the fence they're going to come
right.
down on.
Yeah, so as an advisor, you need to have a comfort level with what you're doing, and then you can give good advice. But if you're not really sure, you're stuck in that quagmire, right?
So anything else coming up to look forward to at all, Jay? Or?
Well, July 31st is the filing deadline for the calendar year plans for their first returns without extension. So that's, just about a month away, 5-6 weeks. Other than that, it's just great to be able to be in an industry where people need to save and they want to do it smartly, and we help them out.
So what's your phone number and website?
We are 800-652-7067, and it is integritypension.com.
Great. Always good to have you here, Jay.
Thank you, guys.
Looking forward to having you again next month. I'm glad we finally could extend it out a little bit. We went a little bit long here, and we always cut you short. It was good to have you a little bit long. So I look forward to having you back here next month. Leonard Wright, Money Doctor with the ICPA. We'll be back right after the break.